I want to tell you today the story of a saint, Saint Josaphat. Now, I don't mean the Polish king of whom the basilica down the street is named after, but I mean a different Saint Josaphat, who also in his own right was a king and had a kingdom, but was from a different time and from a different place. He was from the 4th century in India. His feast in the West, that is the Latin Church for us, is on November the 27th, but in the East, it's actually kept today on August the 26th. And St. Josaphat started off his whole upbringing was born a prince under the king. He was the son of the king Avenir, and his only child. He never thought he was going to have children, but he was given Josaphat. And that King Avenir, he hated Christians. He persecuted the faith in his land, and he vowed to do anything and everything in his power to keep the faith from coming to Josaphat. And so, in order to do so, he wanted to make sure that he never had the stirrings of mind to think of eternity. He never had the opportunity to think of what might happen if bad things were to come to him. And so he kept Josaphat shut up in the palace to avoid seeing even any kind of pain or sickness or old age or death at all. He kept them in the palace, and then he also forbade all of the servants who would teach and look after the boy that they were not to talk of any of those things to Josaphat, that he would only know pleasantry and happiness and joy and nothing of pain and suffering. And so he did all of that to keep him from even having the chance of converting to Catholicism. But when Josaphat grew older, he became a young adult, he started to realize that there was a whole world outside of his palace. And he was tired of being cooped up. He was tired of only knowing the walls around him. And so he longed for and desired to leave the palace walls and to go out and to see other parts of the kingdom. And at first the king really did not want to have anything to do with that, but eventually, in seeing how desirous Josaphat was and the fact that he was not going to let it go, he finally relented and let him leave, being accompanied by a servant out through the kingdom. And he told the servants, anytime he wants to leave, go ahead of him and try to clear out any kind of people that might be sick or old or infirm, so he doesn't see any kind of suffering as he goes along his journeys. And the servants did that, but it was not possible to keep all of those things away once he left the palace walls. And so one day he happened upon two men that were by the roadside, one of which was blind, and the other person was a leper. And upon seeing them, he asked the servant, you know, what is wrong with those two men? And the servant had to answer his question. He explained to them that they were sick, that they had these illnesses, and that it afflicted them. And he asked them, well, does that happen to just certain people, or can it happen to anybody? No, it can happen to anybody. Well, did he know it was going to happen, or did it just fall upon him? And the servant had to tell him, well, no man can know his future, and so thus, you know, it could happen unexpectedly to anyone at all. And Josaphat said nothing in that regard, but it troubled him, and he kept it in his mind, and he didn't forget about it, but it caused no trouble for the servant. Then another day they were going for a walk again, and he happened upon this very elderly man who was very wrinkled and decrepit in a kind of a very hunched over way and could barely walk, and he had no teeth left in his mouth, and he was, you know, kind of falling into just that state of, you know, where their body was truly failing him. And he saw this man, and he said, well, what's wrong with that man there? He looks, you know, very, very bad. And the servant had to explain to him, well, he's extremely old. And he said, well, you know, is that a particular ailment to him, or does that come to everybody? And the servant told him, no, everybody will one day grow old. And he says, well, what's the end of the man that grows old? And the servant had to tell him, death. Death is the end of those who grow old. And again, Josaphat, he held on to that. He kept it in his mind. He smiled throughout, so his father didn't gain suspicion as to what he was thinking about. But all along, it troubled his heart that he learned of these realities out in the world, and the fact that he himself one day will not be able to escape death, most especially that he won't be able to escape death one day. And with that, he realized that he had been up to this point sheltered and kept from knowing the truth of the world and how it works and life and how it works. And he sought after truth from that day forward. In fact, he even prayed. He prayed that one day that he might find the truth in his life. And he prayed with all sincereness. Well, at the same time as he was praying, there was an old hermit named Barlaam. And Barlaam was a very holy man who lived off in the desert by himself. But the Spirit of God came to him and inspired him and told him that he needed to go and he needed to talk to the prince, young Josaphat, and teach him the truths of the Catholic faith. And so he went to the palace and he disguised himself as a merchant of pearls. And he came and he told one of the guards, he said, "You know, I have a great pearl that I know His Majesty would want to see, and I want to try to sell it to him. It has great powers. You see, it'll anybody who has any kind of illness, blindness, or deafness, any kind of leprosy, whatever, it'll cure them of that. And it'll give wisdom to even the foolish, the most foolish of men." And the servant, the guard being a little skeptical, said, "Well, you know, show me the pearl first, and then I'll let you into the palace." He said, "Oh, no, 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 no. You know, those with bad eyesight, their eyes fall upon the pearl, it loses its powers right away. And if a person be given into lust, then the pearl will right away lose all of its powers and be no good anymore." And the servant said, "Well, I indeed have bad eyesight," which, you know, he could see. And he said, "I indeed have bad eyesight, and moreover, I live a life devoted to the flesh. And so you better not show it to me. Show it to the prince directly and let him in to go to the prince." Now, Barlaam was talking about not an actual pearl, but rather was talking about the grace of God in eternity and how that takes away all illness. And so that was his secret meaning to what he was talking about. And so he came in and he began to talk to Josaphat and talk to him about truth. And Josaphat realized, "This is what I've been looking for. I want to know the truth." And so he sat and listened for hours on end to the instruction of Barlaam, who taught him all the truths of the world and of the Catholic faith, the essential truths of the faith. And Josaphat, listening to his arguments, realized there was no argument against them. And he was fully convinced, and he was converted on the spot, and Barlaam baptized him there. But Josaphat didn't stop at that. He wanted to live a life completely devoted to God. And so he wanted to leave the palace and go off with Barlaam into the desert and stay there, living a life of prayer and penance. Well, Barlaam, as much as he liked that idea, he explained to Josaphat that it was not part of God's providence at that time. But in time, if he perseveres in the faith, if he perseveres in virtue, all the way to the end, God will show him when that time is right for him to join in the desert. Well, Barlaam left, and then Josaphat started to live a good Christian life, and the king, for his part, learned of this eventually. He was furious at the conversion of his son. He must figure out how to bring him back to the pagan ways and to have him abandon the Christian faith. And so his chief advisor told him that he knew a person that looked exactly like Barlaam and acted and spoke exactly like him. His name was Nakor, and that all they needed to do was call him in and they'd have him pretend to defend the faith in an argument against the pagan priests. And then when he's beaten in the argument by those pagan priests, he will convince Josaphat that what he had learned was a lie and that he should really come back to paganism. But Josaphat, it was made known to him by God that this person to come was actually an impostor, And so when he saw this pseudo Barbalam, this man named Nakhla, he went up to him and he pretended to think that he was the real person. And he told him, he says, you know, you've taught me so well, and I trust that you will defend the faith successfully. But know this, if you fail, I will cut out your heart and your tongue, and I'll feed it to my dogs as a warning against those who try to deceive the son of the king. Well, Nakhla was terrified, and he looked at his two options that he had now. Do I come clean and say that I am a pagan and I'm trying to deceive the prince, or do I try to defend the faith as I agreed to? They didn't say that I couldn't win the argument, and so he decides better to not upset the prince, and he goes out and he starts composing this defense of the faith, and for his part, he wins all of the arguments, and the pagan priests are completely confounded, and they have no answers for him. And to the point that the king is so frustrated, he says, that's it, we need to take a time off. We need to take a step away from this argument. We'll reconvene tomorrow and continue on. Because he's so frustrated and aggravated by this reality. And so Josaphat says, well, you know, it's only fair that, you know, if you're going to meet with your priest, that I meet with Barlaam and we kind of talk about what we'll talk about tomorrow. And the king begrudgingly concedes that. And so he takes this Nakhla aside, and he talks to him about what he had just defended, and indeed ends up converting him in the end and baptizing him, and he sneaks off quietly to go live a hermit life in the desert, thus ending any kind of oral arguments. Well, the king wasn't done yet. He sends another advisor, decides to tempt the prince, and so he sends him these really wicked women who are going to try to test his virtue and test his chastity. And they come to him, and he is very strongly tempted by these women, and he has no recourse but to cry out to God in prayer. He falls upon his knees, he makes the sign of the cross, and he begs God to help him. And in time, and with perseverance in that prayer, soon he has the strength to resist with full fortitude any of the advances of these wicked women. And so they go their way. Well, those women, they had demons that were in possession of them at that time, and those demons went to the advisor, and they told him that while they were attacking and they were thinking that they were gaining ground, they could see success in making him sin in the future. Then he fell to his knees and made the sign of the cross, and by that sign of the cross, they no longer had any power over the prince. Well, the advisor, by seeing what was done and the power held in the prayers of the good Christian Josaphat, he could no longer deny the truth of the Catholic faith, and he converted and was baptized and went on his way. And thus the king had no other recourse to bring him back other than to stop trying altogether. And so he gave him what was rightfully his. He gave half of his kingdom over to his son Josaphat to rule. And Josaphat did just that. He wanted still to go to the desert, but he realized it wasn't yet his time. And so he ruled that half of the kingdom, and he did so for the one true God. And he had great charity to all of those in his kingdom, especially the ill, especially the old and the sick, and those with maladies. He had great care for them, and he set up many churches in order to bring more souls to the true faith. And while king, he continually prayed and sacrificed every single day for both his kingdom and for his father. His father finally listened to those graces and converted towards the end of his life and died a very holy death at the end. Now, with the whole kingdom in his care and his father and all obstacles out of his way, he realized now was the providential time for him to finally live out the last days of his life in that prayer and sacrifice. And so he handed over his kingdom to Barachias, who was a good steward of the kingdom and took great care to continue on with all the things that the now King Josaphat had implemented. And he left and went into the desert and finally found Barlaam in a cave. And he joined up with him with great joy, and they lived out the rest of both of their days, praying, fasting, and sacrificing together. When the both of them had finally died, The king, Barachias, had taken both of their bodies from the cave and buried them with great honor in the city, where they were honored as saints all the way up to this day. So why tell you this story of Josaphat? Well, as you can see from today's gospel, it's the importance of relying on the providence of God. The providence of God most especially for souls. In everybody's lifetime, they will receive sufficient grace and sufficient opportunity to save their souls. Not a question of that. God made no man to go to hell. And so everybody has the chance and the grace to save their souls. Whether they cooperate with it or not is their choice to make. But God will certainly work to gain them for heaven. And for us, it's so easy to fall into the trappings of despairing thoughts in regards to salvation, or to think that so few are going to be able to achieve that ultimate goal. We look at the world around us, and we see all of its trappings and all of its wickedness, and we think, you know, what a hard battle to fight. And we see the deception of the new church. And we see the deception of the American idea of religion, which is that everybody's just perfectly fine and hungry for glory. And we see the education systems pumping out atheism and the skepticism all the time. And we wonder, how can a person be victorious against such odds? Yet, that type of thought cuts the providence of God out of the equation altogether. God will arrange the opportunity. God will give the graces for each and every person to save their soul. And so it's for us to trust that that's going to happen and to pray that they do indeed accept it. We see it all the time, all throughout our journeys as priests, throughout the country and the world. These younger people who grew up with no religion whatsoever coming to realize the true faith. And it's always a story arranged around divine providence. Very much similar to that of St. Joseph. Maybe not to the great extreme as him, but very similar. Think of it. He was sheltered completely from the world around him and from any possible influence towards Christianity by his father. Yet, because he desired the truth, and because he wanted to know truth, which is ultimately God himself, God arranged it for it to happen. He gave him the graces to receive that with an open heart, and to change and to convert, and to be steadfast to his end in that conviction of the one true faith. And for those that we care most about in our lives, and we worry about their salvation because they don't have the true faith, well, St. Josaphat again becomes our example for our lives. His father was completely against anything to do with Christianity. Yet, he was won over in the end. How? By St. Josaphat's prayers, by his sacrifices, by the good example provided in his life, by his charity, and by the good example provided in how he ruled the kingdom well, with service of God alongside of it. And by that, in the persevering in that way for such a long time, finally, when needed the most, the father could no longer deny it and accepted that opportunity to convert, and did, and died, and saved his soul. God's providence is what we have to trust in. He's all good. He's all-powerful. There's nothing beyond his purview in this life. He wants each and every one of us to save our souls, and he will do everything he can to help us to choose that end. Our part is prayer. Our part is sacrifice. And then in the end, it's to trust in the good influence of God. From there on out, we do our part, and we trust that he will do his. He is the good God, and his providence will arrange everything necessary to save souls. May God bless you in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Ghost.